The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles mostly from the Harvard Health Letter. This is the February 2024 issue. And the first article is entitled, Trouble Getting Your Medications. Here's how to cope with pharmacy challenges. Use these strategies to get your prescriptions filled. Is your pharmacy noticeably different? Maybe the staff is smaller, or the business hours shorter, or perhaps the store you've frequented has closed recently. These types of changes are happening across the country. For consumers, that's resulting in prescription holdups, hassles, and potential dangers. In some places, it can take all day, a few days, or longer to get a prescription filled. That could be a problem if you run out of certain medications, like those for high blood pressure or diabetes, and you need a refill as soon as possible, says Joanne Doyle Petrangolo, a pharmacist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital and board member of the Massachusetts Pharmacists Association. Why is it happening? Like many other businesses, pharmacists are struggling with budget cuts and staffing shortages. That's leading to challenging working conditions for pharmacists and the technicians who support them. They're doing more with less, and yet they're expected to fill hundreds of prescriptions every day, administer vaccines, consult with customers, and call insurance companies to resolve billing issues, Doyle Petrangolo says. As a result, many pharmacy workers are experiencing burnout. They say they don't have the time to do their jobs properly, and they worry about patient safety. Pharmacy workers in some U.S. cities have staged walkouts to protest poor working conditions. Meanwhile, customers are sometimes scrambling to get their prescriptions filled, or wondering if they should be concerned about the safety of their medications. What can you do? Pharmacy issues have been brewing for years, and they're not going to disappear overnight. Until they improve, you can use several strategies to get your prescriptions. First, you can try a different pharmacy. If you experience frequent delays at your pharmacy, consider switching your prescription to another store. Ask friends for recommendations, and call your insurance company for a list of local pharmacies in your network. You might also consider trying a small independent pharmacy, which might provide more personalized service. Seeing if you can switch your prescriptions to your plan's mail service option, or trying an online pharmacy. But beware of unscrupulous online pharmacies. According to the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, most online pharmacies are rogue. They operate illegally and sell bogus or unapproved medications, Doyle Petrangolo says. To find a licensed, legitimate online pharmacy, like Amazon's pharmacy service, which is at pharmacy.amazon.com, look for one that's been verified by the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy. Use the group's free Buy Safely tool, which is at safe.pharmacy/buy-safely, which allows you to type in an online pharmacy website to see if it's been verified. If you use maintenance drugs, those taken daily for chronic conditions like high cholesterol, high or low blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, thyroid disease, depression, or anxiety, don't wait until the last minute to refill your prescription. If you have a one-month supply, see if you can reorder your prescription when you're down to a week's worth, Doyle Petrangolo says, or put the prescription on auto-refill, which should allow the pharmacy to refill the prescription within a week or two of when it's due. And even though it's on auto, call your pharmacy a week before you want to pick up the prescription to confirm it will be available. Double-check your medications. Pharmacists work hard to fill prescriptions accurately, making sure you receive the right drug at the right dose. Yet mistakes sometimes occur. It's unclear if that's happening more frequently now, but Doyle Petronglo says you should always double-check medications before leaving a pharmacy, no matter the circumstance. Make sure your name is on the label, it's the right medication, and it has the same strength and instructions your doctor mentioned to you. And ask the pharmacist if there are any special instructions, Doyle Petronglo says. Also, look at your pills to become familiar with their appearance. If you get a batch that looks different, ask your pharmacist about it or search online to find an image of the pill you have and what it's used for. Generic medications can come in a variety of shapes and colors, which can vary by manufacturer. Pharmacy workers are doing their best to serve you. Try to be patient with them. They want to give you your prescription as soon as possible, but they want to get it exactly right, and that takes time, especially if pharmacies have fewer people on staff, Doyle Petronglo says. Until working conditions improve, it's smart to build in more time to obtain your prescriptions. Sometimes pharmacies are unable to fill a prescription in a timely manner because they don't have the medication on hand. It could just be that the drug is temporarily out of stock, or it could be due to a drug manufacturing issue causing a drug shortage. What should you do? If it's a manufacturing issue, call your doctor. He or she may need to change you to a different medication. If the prescription is temporarily out of stock, ask your pharmacist to see if another store in the chain has it. Make the call yourself, or ask your doctor to call in a prescription to a different pharmacy, one where it's already confirmed that your medication is in stock and available, says Joan Doyle Petronglo, a pharmacist at Massachusetts General Hospital. Now I'm going to go over another section of the Harvard Health Letter. This is called Ask the Doctor with Dr. Anthony L. Komaroff, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. Question. I'm 81 years old, and I've been on a statin drug for 30 years because I'm at increased risk for heart disease. At my age, do I need to still keep taking it? And Dr. Komaroff responds, statin drugs were introduced into medical practice in the 1980s. They are very effective at lowering LDL, or bad cholesterol, and in reducing inflammation inside cholesterol-filled plaques of atherosclerosis. In people older than 75, are they still effective in lowering cholesterol and in reducing the risk of heart disease? In the last few years, we have started to get solid information that addresses your question. A recent study from Denmark, published in the August 2023 issue of Annals of Internal Medicine, included about 84,000 people, about 10,000 of whom were older than 75. Participants began taking one of two different statin drugs, simvastatin, or Zocor, or atorvastatin, or Lipitor, between 2008 and 2018. The study found that the people most likely to have their LDL cholesterol lowered by statin drugs were those older than 75. So statins remain effective at lowering cholesterol in people older than 75. But do they also reduce the risk of developing heart disease? Another observational study from Denmark, published in The Lancet in 2020, identified more than 90,000 people not on statins who were free of heart disease or diabetes, a risk factor for heart disease, and then started taking a statin drug. Over an average follow-up of 7.7 years, the people who were most likely to benefit from statin drugs were, again, those older than 75. Randomized trials provide strong evidence than observational studies. However, relatively few randomized trials of the ability of statins and other cholesterol-lowering drugs to reduce heart disease have included people older than 75. To overcome that problem, an international team based here at Harvard pooled the results for more than 21,000 people older than 75, and even more who were younger than 75, from multiple different cholesterol-lowering drug trials. The study, published in 2020 in The Lancet, found that the older group benefited at least as much as the younger group. In short, for people older than 75 who have heart disease already, or who, like you, are at increased risk of developing heart disease, I think there is now solid evidence that statins remain effective at lowering cholesterol, and more important, in reducing the risk of new or recurrent heart disease. For people older than 75 who have not been diagnosed with heart disease and are not at increased risk for developing it, I think the value of statins is still uncertain. Now, here's another interesting article from the Harvard Health Letter, again from February 2024, and it's entitled "Electricity as Chronic Pain Medications." You might be willing to try anything to relieve chronic pain, even getting zapped with tiny shocks of electricity. The concept began evolving long before Ben Franklin conducted his famous experiment with a kite and a key. For example, the ancient Greeks used the natural electrical discharge of torpedo fish to relieve headache and gout. Eventually, as scientists figured out what electricity was and how to use it safely, they applied it to medicine. Today, there are several types of electroceutical therapies available to treat pain. Three have our attention. And the first is TENS therapy. That's capital T, capital E, capital N, capital S. Again, pronounced TENS. In transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, or TENS therapy, a machine sends pulses of non-painful, low-intensity electricity to electrodes placed on the skin. The strength of the current and the frequency of the pulses remain consistent throughout a 20-minute session. How does TENS work to quiet pain? The electrical stimulation closes the gate that allows pain signals to get to the brain. It's just like when you were a kid and got an ouch. Your mom might have told you to rub it to make it feel better. That was enough to close the gate, explains Vitaly Napadau, director of the Scott Schoen and Nancy Adams Discovery Center for Recovery from Chronic Pain at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. You can go to a practitioner like a physical therapist for TENS therapy or purchase a home TENS unit, which costs about $25 and up. Medicare sometimes covers the cost. Electroacupuncture. Like TENS therapy, electroacupuncture interrupts pain signals by delivering a consistent frequency of jolts at a certain strength. Instead of being delivered via electrode patches on the skin, it's delivered with acupuncture, hair-thin needles inserted at specific locations in the body. Electrodes are clipped onto the needles and then charged with electricity. The needles allow the current to penetrate deep underneath the skin, to muscles, tendons, and deeper nerves, Napadau says. The treatment has the added benefit of acupuncture, which in traditional Chinese medicine is believed to affect energy channels. Modern medicine has found that acupuncture can adjust signaling molecules in the nervous system. Electroacupuncture is available only from a private practitioner or clinic. Sessions cost about $100 per hour, which is often covered in part by Medicare or private insurance. Then there's scrambler therapy. Scrambler therapy is a newer treatment that sends low-intensity electrical currents to electrodes on the skin. But the frequency of the pulses isn't steady. It changes constantly with the goal of scrambling, not inhibiting, pain signals and replacing them with non-pain messages. The information is then perceived as a pleasant sensation, tingling, or itching. Scrambler therapy is found in hospitals or clinics, but it's not widely available. Most insurance companies don't cover the cost, which can be hundreds of dollars per session. Are they effective? Experts debate whether electroceutical therapies can zap away chronic pain. TENS therapy and electroacupuncture are well established, and some people swear by them for relief, but they don't work for everyone, and research has produced mixed feelings. TENS therapy has lost some favor because it's thought that the effect isn't long-lasting. But I think a lot of that has to do with the parameters used in stimulation. At lower frequencies, you might be able to get longer-lasting results, Napadau says, and some evidence has shown that electroacupuncture can last for months after therapy. But you can't do it by yourself at home like you can with TENS therapy. What about scrambler therapy? A review of a small preliminary study published July 13, 2023 in the New England Journal of Medicine found that scrambler therapy reduced chronic pain in 80 to 90% of study participants, that it might have long-lasting effects of months or years, and that it might be more effective than TENS therapy. But we'll need more research to confirm the findings. Is it right for you? Stay away from electroceuticals if you have any kind of implanted stimulation device, like a pacemaker or a bladder stimulator. Good candidates for electroceutical therapies are people who have chronic pain, like arthritis or neuropathy, neck or back pain, or pain from a cancer treatment. Potential side effects include skin irritation from electrode patches, burns, which are rare from electrodes, bleeding from acupuncture needles, dizziness, headaches, nausea, or worsened pain. Yes, there are risks, but in general they are lower than the potential for side effects from many pain medications, Napadau says. Get your doctor's okay before seeking treatment, especially if you have a heart condition, like an abnormal heartbeat, and make sure your electroceutical therapy clinician is a licensed health professional who's trained to provide treatment. Now here's some surprising risk factors for vision loss. Vision loss threatens your independence, so it's essential to get regular comprehensive eye exams, particularly if you have certain vision loss risk factors. Some you might know about, others might surprise you. First, there are some well-known risk factors. Some of the most common risk factors for vision loss are diabetes, high blood pressure, and old age. Here's how they can affect your eyes. People with diabetes have high blood sugar levels, which can damage blood vessels throughout the body. In the eyes, damaged blood vessels can leak, causing swelling or bleeding in the retina, or swelling in the central part of the retina called the macula. Both conditions, diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema, can lead to vision loss. Another vision risk of diabetes, you're more prone to get cloudy eye lenses or cataracts, or lenses that swell and create vision loss that comes and goes, says Dr. Nimish Patel, a vitreoretinal surgeon at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts Eye and Ear. Next is high blood pressure and high cholesterol. High blood pressure, a measurement of 130 over 80 millimeters of mercury or greater in adults, contributes to several eye problems. It can worsen leaky blood vessels in the eyes. It can also lead to blockages in eye veins or arteries, causing vision loss. Higher pressure causes wear and tear on blood vessels in the eyes, which makes them more likely to form clots that block blood flow, Dr. Patel says. High levels of LDL or bad cholesterol also can promote blood clots in the eyes. Older age. Aging can trigger several changes in the eyes that increase the risks for certain conditions. The most common is age-related macular degeneration. With aging, in some people, cells in the retina no longer function well. They allow deposits of substances that destroy the macula. The result is central vision loss. Age also increases the risk of glaucoma, damage to the optic nerve that carries visual signals to the brain. Glaucoma is often caused by pressure that builds up when the eye's drainage system no longer works properly. The result is loss of side vision. You might know it, but certain lifestyle habits or health conditions can increase your risk for eye problems as well. These are called surprising risk factors. One is inactivity. Simply hanging out on your couch all the time can wind up hurting your eyes. That's because a sedentary lifestyle increases your risk for diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. Those conditions, in turn, boost your risk for eye disease. Also, psoriasis can cause raised plaques of white scaling skin. It's an autoimmune condition, a chronic attack launched by the body's immune system. Sometimes psoriasis leads to an inflammatory eye condition called uveitis. Symptoms include redness, light sensitivity, pain with bright lights, and foggy vision. How can eye and skin problems be linked? They're both the result of chronic inflammation in the body, Dr. Patel says. Other autoimmune conditions, like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, also can cause uveitis. Then there's shingles. Shingles is a reactivation of the chickenpox virus, also called varicella zoster, that's been dormant and hiding in the nerve cells. It can move through the nerves to the surface of the skin, causing painful blisters and potentially long-lasting pain. If the rash occurs on the forehead or nose, it can also affect the eye, causing problems in the front part of the eye called the cornea. Eye symptoms, like vision loss or light sensitivity, can develop weeks to months after getting shingles. Finally, there is smoking. Smoking is a risk factor for many eye conditions. It increases inflammation in the body and in the eye, and acts as an accelerant to any aging or degenerative process in the retina. Smokers are more likely to develop cataracts and macular degeneration, and smoking can worsen uveitis and diabetic retinopathy. What you should do. The American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends that you get a comprehensive dilated eye exam at age 40, even if you don't have any known eye disease. After that, you'll need a comprehensive eye exam every few years until you're 65. Then you'll need a screening every year or two, more frequently if you have eye disease. If you have any of the risk factors included in this article, you might need an eye exam sooner than the guidelines recommend. In between eye exams, be proactive. Try to get underlying conditions under control. Exercise daily, eat a healthy diet, and conduct a simple vision test about once a month. When you're watching TV, close one eye. Make sure the open eye is functioning as well as possible. Then repeat the test with the other eye. If you notice any changes, call your eye doctor to make an appointment. Now I'm going to turn to news briefs. And the first one is, cutting sodium significantly lowers blood pressure. Again, we're in the February 2024 issue of Harvard Health Letter. When you have high blood pressure, the first line of defense is taking a medication to treat it. But eliminating the equivalent of a teaspoon of salt from your daily diet might be just as effective, suggests a small randomized study published online November 2023 by JAMA. Research asked 213 people aged 50 to 75 who had either normal blood pressure or uncontrolled blood pressure to try two different diets. Half the participants were randomly assigned to eat a high-sodium diet for 1 week that added 2.2 milligrams of sodium, about a teaspoon of salt per day, to their usual diet. The others ate a low-sodium diet that allowed just 500 milligrams of sodium every day. Then the participants switched diets, eating the opposite diet for 1 week. Participants' blood pressure measurements and urine samples were collected periodically during the study. What the scientists found was that when participants ate the low-sodium diet, the vast majority experienced a 8-point drop in their systolic blood pressure, which of course is the top number, compared to when they ate a high-sodium diet, and an average 6-point drop compared to when they ate their usual diet. The low-sodium diet reduced sodium intake by about the amount in a teaspoon of salt per day compared with participants' usual diet. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.